Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Welcome to our hosts, Susan France and Gina McAndrews, and Paul Wearson.
Thanks, Mike, and greetings to you and our listeners as Thanksgiving approaches. Paul and I have invited a couple of storytellers to come in for the holiday tomorrow. But we'll start today by featuring several of the surrounding towns starting their holiday activities. We'll also have a surprise guest as we explore what happened to our newspapers.
But right now is the time to visit our neighbors for their Main Street events. I know Paul is planning to talk with Shannon McKinley at the Story City Greater Chamber of Connection. Right, Paul? Hello, Sharon.
Right. I'm here. I hope Shannon is, too.
I am here.
Welcome, and I'm glad you're up so early in the morning. You're probably very busy. I know that we're beginning to get into the realm of pre-Christmas stuff with the Thanksgiving holiday, and I know we probably have a very important event coming up this week with the Christmas tree lighting, so Shannon, give us a rundown of what you're doing for the holidays.
Absolutely, Paul. Thanks so much for having me. Well, it was an exciting day here in Story City yesterday as the tree did arrive and has been put in the center of Broad and Penn Street, just as tradition always has. As we prepare this week, on Friday, November 26th, will be our annual Story City Yule Fest kickoff to the holidays, and we will have our tree lighting at 6 o'clock. This year we will be having it live and in person again, which is exciting since last year we had to only do it on Facebook. But we also are going to keep that element of Facebook also, so in case people are out of town or unable to make it to our downtown area. Our fire department is excited to bring back their chili supper with a special guest of, we've heard that Santa is coming to visit the little kids and do some cookie decorating, and that'll be from 5 to 7 p.m. at the fire station. And then you can wrap up the night with a family movie at the Historic Story Theater, which is playing the brand new Disney movie at 7 o'clock. So that'll wrap up our Friday Yule Fest activities, but then we will wake up bright and early on Saturday for Shop Small Saturday, where our local retailers and vendors will be celebrating the kickoff to the holiday season with Shop Small Saturday, and people can come to the chamber office at 524 Broad Street starting at 9 o'clock in the morning and pick up their swag bag that is full of goodies from Story City and coupons to those retailers. And then the retail shops will be open. There will be a special guest arriving at the GCC office at 10 o'clock for some photos. The kids can write their letters to Santa and also pick up a craft. So we're looking forward to a great weekend here in Story City to kick off the holidays.
That's great. And, you know, you have things going on throughout the month of December, too. So these are time-honored traditions. I remember going to a free movie at the theater, that same theater, of course, when I was growing up. It was everybody turned out. It was everyone shopping downtown, and all the kids went to the movie, and everybody had something to do. And I remember fondly that they were great Hollywood films, you know, that they played at the theater. Old Dick Peterson, the manager, took special care to have a great flick for us. And I always enjoyed that as a child, and I'm glad to see the tradition still goes on. And the Christmas tree, I have a special identity with that because my grandfather, Oscar Henderson, was the one who decorated the first tree back in 1913 or something like that. And he was involved in with a committee of people who put together the idea of having a Christmas tree in the town square. And, of course, we have the guy wires that hold the tree in place. And Oscar thought that not only do you have lights on the tree, but you put them on the guy wires, too, that support the tree. So the way we do it today, you'd probably think it's underdone because we're only lighting the tree itself, you know. But it's a time-honored tradition. It's really happened ever since the beginning of that tradition.
Yep.
I think one year, maybe during World War II, they had Santa in a sleigh, and that just did not go over, and so they went back to the Christmas tree tradition. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening on Friday with the Christmas tree lighting. Anything else coming up that you want to highlight, Shannon?
No. I would just say that we're looking forward to, you know, supporting local communities, you know, after a year of COVID, you know, keeping our shops open, and just everybody is so excited to get ready for the holiday season. And I know in my office, we're gearing up for 2022 already, which does seem crazy, but we're looking forward to festivities. Mostly one of Paul's favorites, Scandinavian Days, coming back the first weekend in June. So the ball is rolling on that stuff already once we finish up this holiday Yule Fest celebration.
Now, as part of the Yule Fest celebration, are there events going on during December that you want to highlight?
Really, there. Once Yule Fest is done, there it really kind of becomes a, I don't want to say a slower season, but just working on, there will be a Facebook 24 days of shopping through Story City will be one of our features, which is something we're just looking at to help our local businesses get that exposure to our community and the surrounding communities. As of events, this will be the last big event for 2021.
Okay. And so basically we're talking about promoting the local retailers and businesses and having an opportunity to shop. And you might explain some of the things that you have there at the chamber that assist them in doing that, coupons and that sort of thing. That makes shopping a lot easier. You might explain how some of that works.
Yep, absolutely. So everybody will get a swag bag that stops in the first 100 people. In those swag bags, there are coupons to local businesses. Also in that will be from the chamber office, the GCC office, something that we call Story City Cash. And it will be either in a $2 increment or a $5 increment. And that is used just like regular cash. And that is something that we have in Story City that anybody can walk in and purchase. It's kind of like a gift card, but we call it Story City Cash. And it spends just like cash at any of our businesses in Story City. And it's just great because that guarantees that that money stays in our local community. And it's not exclusive just to one of our businesses. So instead of buying a gift card to Casey's where they might use in Ankeny or wherever, if they use Story City cash, it stays in Story City. So over the last year, we had some great promotions with it. That we had some larger businesses help for us to do some promotions. We don't have that this year, but it is something that a lot of our local businesses do buy and use as incentives for their employees. So it just is another way to promote staying local and shopping local. And it's a great asset to our community.
Well, I think that sounds great, Shannon. And, you know, it is wonderful that we're getting back to speed on some of these things that we've had to really forego during the pandemic. And, of course, the pandemic is not over. We're still dealing with that. But it's nice to know that we're reviving all the traditions that we had to modify last year. But, you know, some of those modifications have been good for us, as you pointed out, because we did all that on Facebook last year. That opportunity is still there for people who aren't in Story City anymore, probably natives who live elsewhere in the country. They can actually get on Facebook and watch the Christmas tree lighting. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct, Paul. Last year, you know, throwing a wrench in our system did not do it live in person, and we chose to do it on Facebook. We didn't really know what to expect. but that video got thousands of views and actually ended up being viewed in 13 different countries, which was totally shocking to me, you know, small town Iowa girl, like, yeah, people aren't going to watch us like the tree. Well, they did. And I started getting phone calls in about early October from a couple of people that had grown up in our area asking, you know, are you going to do it again on Facebook so we can watch it since we can't be home? And I said, absolutely we are. So I do think, Paul, you know, in something where we tradition was to have it here in person, but we adapted and pivoted to, you know, doing it as a live stream. And now we're adapting and pivoting to do it in person and live stream is a great asset for people that can't come and see it in person. So we look forward to that and our special guests that will be in attendance that night and getting the tree lit for the whole community and those outside the community to enjoy.
Well, thank you, Shannon. And that means the Christmas tree lighting, thanks to the pandemic, is now visible around the world, the Christmas tree lighting at Story City coming up. Shannon McKinley, thank you. And a happy Thanksgiving. And if I don't see you, Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks, Paul. Shannon. Thanks, guys, for having me.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where Paul Wirsten and Gina McAndrews are with me to visit some holiday events coming up next weekend. The lighting of the Story City Christmas tree is a personal story for Paul, which you heard. You've been with me for quite a few fall fun drives, Paul, but this is unlike any other because we are moving to a new home at 622 Douglas that we actually own. If you aren't already a member of KHOI, you can see some pictures of the building and some of the rooms under construction. This was sent out by email to our members. If you are just joining, make sure your membership application includes your email. So happy Thanksgiving and make it happier for one and all the listeners of KHOI by calling 515-292-2878 or going to our website, khoifm.org. And press the yellow donate button.
Thank you, Susan.
Yeah, Susan, it's a great idea. And I think that it's very exciting that we're moving into a new studio. And that only underlines the fact that KHOI is resilient and changing and open to change and growing. And I really want to emphasize the importance of the community radio idea. And it's not available anywhere else on the dial locally. KHOI gives you a lot of local news and views and access to local happenings that just aren't there on the airwaves anymore. So it's very important that we all work together to preserve community radio by seeking a membership and donating to KHOI.
Thank you, Paul. Yes, we sure do have an important radio, and it's sure growing. And we're sure happy to have our own place now, just a couple blocks away. So that worked out great. Well, we've heard about the lighting of the Christmas tree in Story City. So what will be happening in Boone? I thought you said you spoke with someone in the Boone Convention and Visitors Bureau, Susan?
Yes, I did. And the pandemic requires some adaptations that you will hear about. Here's Laura Beatty to tell us what's coming up.
What are you doing in Boone for the Christmas season?
Sure. So we are doing ongoing promotions for shopping early and shopping local this holiday season. Of course, encouraging all of our community members to do their Christmas and holiday shopping at our favorite Boone retailers before they leave town or consider shopping online. So shop early and shop local has kind of been our key phrase for this season. Just a couple weeks ago, we did a holiday open house with some additional promotions with a lot of our area businesses and and that went over very well. They featured treats and prizes and just really encouraged some early holiday shopping, especially in our downtown Boone retailers and restaurants. And so in addition to the holiday shopping and encouraging folks to stick around town to buy their gifts this year, we are looking forward to a traditional event coming up here the week after Thanksgiving. This year it's called Christmas on Story Street. And Christmas on Story Street will take place on Thursday, December 2nd, from 5 to 7 p.m. in the evening. We've got free hot chocolate. We'll do a lighted parade, a short little lighted parade. And we do a tree lighting ceremony in our green space park at the intersection of 8th and Story Streets. And with our tree lighting ceremony, we'll sing some traditional Christmas carols as well. And we'll also have some food trucks outside if you don't want to cook any dinner that night and want to grab a little something to eat for dinner. So we are very busy putting the final touches together for Christmas on Story Street, and very much looking forward to seeing Santa Claus and one of his oldest elves out there and enjoying some great holiday music.
Now, how does this differ from last year? I remember that you have boombooks this year.
Yeah, we do. We offer boombooks all throughout the year. It's a great opportunity. We have a lot of businesses who will purchase boombooks for employee incentives or prizes, and they do make a great gift. The boombooks can be purchased here at our chamber at 903 Story Street in downtown Boone. And it is essentially it's a gift check that's redeemable at any of our over 200 member businesses. So it's a great way. It's a one-size-fits-all gift where your money stays local, but it's a really, really, really great gift or prize or maybe little holiday treat to somebody, whether it's a coworker, friend, or family member in the community.
What are the things that are coming back this year that you weren't able to do last year?
Yeah, so Christmas on Story Street really didn't happen at all last year. There was, I believe, instead of doing a lighted parade, they did kind of a virtual parade on the radio station. They partnered with KWBG and did a very descriptive kind of radio broadcast of a holiday parade of sorts. But there were no other formal activities that were able to take place last year. I was not here at that point. I joined the chamber this year. So we're very excited to be bringing these traditional events back in person in downtown Boone coming up next week already.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. We'll see everyone in downtown Boone for Christmas on Story Street on December 2nd.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Nine out of eight, seven is nine.
In case you're just tuning in, we've heard reports from Christmas festivities from Story City and Boone. As we move to the county seat of Story County, we are also moving into our second story, which is what happened to our newspapers. When we started covering all the towns in Story County shortly after we went on the air, I started subscribing to all the small town newspapers in Story County, in addition to the Ames Tribune and the Des Moines Register. In the past couple of years, I noticed that the same stories started appearing in several papers, complete with pictures. Then I noticed when I checked the publication information that none of the newspapers except the Des Moines Register had an editor named. Up to then, I had relied on Marla Sparker of the Nevada Journal for stories. From an interview with her several years ago, I knew that she had resigned from her job as editor, but I hadn't realized that there had been no attempt to replace her. So I looked through the archives and found her interview from 2019. Here it is.
Connecting people to people is really what I've done in my journalism career. It's just who I am to be a small town newspaper person. When I first came to the Nevada Journal, it was February of 1991, and I worked for 3 full years into February of 1994. And then I left the newspapers at that time and did some things and worked for the sheriff's office and 911 dispatch center. And then my good friend Annette Forbes asked me if there was any chance I would consider coming back. And I missed it because I love the writing and I love the type of writing that small town papers are. So I decided to go back. So it isn't without a lot of heartache that I've decided to leave it at this time, but the industry has changed so much. It was getting to the point where it was kind of down to me for those two papers. My longtime assistant had retired this month, and I just didn't know if I could keep up with all of the new digital things. And so there are some great young reporters at the Tribune. And I know Kylie Mullen is a wonderful reporter. She's new. And she actually just bought a home in Nevada with her husband. And I'm sure she'll keep an eye on Nevada as much as possible and do some great stories. She's a wonderful writer. A lot of the freelance writers that I've had over the years, some of them are going to continue writing and covering stories.
I'm glad to know that even without you, that the papers will continue.
Yeah.
Well, I heard that you have a Facebook page that you enjoy and are going to continue. Is that right?
I do. About a year and a half ago, I think, I started to do a page called Stories by Marla Sparker. And it's about people, places, and passions. That's what the stories I like to do are about. They tie people, places, and passions together. Because really, it's about those things that we all connect. And so I think when I see the kind of story I really want to do, I can put things there that can be shared. And I can also, you know, maybe in time do some contributing to the paper again.
What's the name of your Facebook page?
Stories, just the word Stories by Marla Sparker.
After listening to that interview again, I looked up the Facebook page, Stories by Marla's, and thought it was delightful. Marla's agreed to come on the local talk this morning to tell us about what it has been like to go from publishing two newspapers to hosting a social media site. Marla's, are you there to...
I am. Yes, I am. You know... It's kind of funny. The page was just a way to continue writing. When I first left the papers, I went into a marketing position for a group of assisted living homes and worked with several of them and did a lot of writing. But the page was kind of something where I could keep tied to residents of Nevada and also residents in my hometown of Wyoming, Iowa. So it was kind of a fun thing in that way. And then a little over a year ago, I was hired by the city of Nevada to do their communications work. And part of that was to have a city news blog on the brand new city website that I was responsible to design. So my writing has kind of continued just in different ways, but I'm always greeted by people on the street when I'm out and about who say they're thankful for the stories either on my page or on the city blog that has continued to keep them informed. So of some things, and it's not as well-rounded as the news coverage I provided with the newspaper, but it's a little hobby on the side that once in a while I can pick up a really fun story. People reach out to me and ask me to do stories. And if I have the time and feel like the story is something really great to share, I'm always happy to do that.
Well, I noticed that you include other people. If somebody sends you a good story, like the horse story.
Right.
You put it in and credit them.
Well, it's kind of funny because I called the page Stories by Marla Sparker because it was going to be my own outlet for just telling the kinds of stories that I've always liked to tell, about people, about events, about businesses, things like that. But Arden Scoop, who happened to be my very first sports editor when I started at the paper in 1991, reached out to me and said, you know, I was doing this series of stories on communities in Story County, and the newspaper had run some of them, but not all of them. And I did all the work, and I really wish that they could be out there. And would you ever consider putting them out there for me? And I said, well, let me think about that. So I thought about it and decided that I thought I could. So Arden has been kind of a special guest writer on my page with that series of stories about the communities of Story County. And then also he wrote a beautiful story about a horse trainer down in the Cambridge Huxley area.
Well, that's a remarkable pivot. And I was surprised to see how well the adaptation worked. I mean, there was, you know, it was much more interesting to me, you know, coming from Ames and just, you know, reading than the old Nevada Journal used to be. And I thought, hey, you know, this is a really neat adaptation, and it's a very entertaining and informative.
Well, you know, it's a hobby. It's a hobby. I always tell people I'm not being paid to do that. So I fit it in on my time in the evenings or on the weekends when I can. Sometimes I will share stories that I've put on the city blog to that page. I've also done some writing for Main Street Nevada and for the NEDC. And sometimes I'll share those stories to my page off of those pages. But it is kind of a hobby and a pastime. So the enjoyable thing for me is there's no deadline there. I do it as I have time. I'm not trying to get it in, and I don't have any size limitations. And I subscribe to a fun program where I can design kind of what I call a cover with some photos and the headline and all of that. And honestly, it just seems like people started to kind of follow. We've had stories that I've had a few stories reach over 20,000 people, which I think is pretty great, given the fact that the newspaper circulation, when I was in my final months there, it dipped under 2,000. So when you say, hey, you can reach over 20,000 people on a social media site, that's pretty incredible. And I know there are people who do this for money, maybe they start a website and all of that. I wasn't really interested. I mean, let's face it, I didn't go into journalism for the money. There isn't any money in that. So it's always been, you work above and beyond what you're being paid just because it's a passion. It's something you love to do. So this has, I'm not making anything off of it. It's just me having fun telling stories. And I really get excited when we have one of the residences here in Nevada for retired people. Their manager had reached out to me. She prints every story that comes out on my page or on the city blog and leaves it in the break room of the residence there. And she said they come out, the residents come out to the break room and ask if there's any news for the day. So she prints the stories out. So, you know, it's kind of a new way of sharing.
Wow. it's amazing because this part of the story really fits into what Shannon McKinley told us about the Christmas tree in Story City, you know, when they couldn't put it out in, when people couldn't come down and see it, and they couldn't have their regular celebration, and they live streamed it, but right. They got a lot more people watching it.
Right.
And they're continuing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, part of leaving the paper that scared me was that maybe I had written my last story. And then I thought, no, I can really turn this page into an outlet. Not knowing at the time that the city would later hire me to kind of do some of the same work. So really, the things that I love to do have kind of changed into some things that I'm doing now, but I'm still writing. I'm still connecting people. That was always my hope at the paper, was to connect people in these communities. And I think through social media, I've found this new way to connect people. So it's been a really fun thing.
Oh, well, it looks fun, and it looks very, it's a very engaging website. I mean, not website, Facebook page. You know, it's amazing. There's so much justifiable criticism of Facebook, and yet it is so useful in my world. It's amazing to, you know, I don't see any ugly. I know a very, very important story about how it was misused, but it's you know, it's great for, you know, telling somebody about an event or you know, advertising something to your friends or something like that.
It's like so many things. There can be both good and bad uses of some mediums, and we see the bad, but we also can really emphasize the good. And because you interviewed two people ahead of me about Christmas activities, I want to just put a plug in that Nevada, I'm helping to organize the first ever Christmas on Main in Nevada. We have brand new streets and downtown sidewalks with beautiful brickwork. Our 2-year city program of, you know, new streets, new infrastructure in the downtown is basically wrapped up. And we're going to celebrate with the first ever Christmas on Main on Saturday, December 11 from 4 to 7. And we have over 35 businesses and organizations in the downtown area and some from other places in the community coming to the downtown area to participate. And it is going to be a lot of fun. So if you're not doing anything that Saturday, and I'm cross my fingers Mother Nature will cooperate, please come to Nevada. We're going to have the entire downtown district, 4 to 5 blocks of it, all the way north of Lincoln Way and south of Lincoln Way, involved in this really, really fun event.
Well, thanks so much for telling us about it, and all the best.
And thank you, Susan. Yes, and they can follow my page, Stories by Marlis Barker, and I will share some of the things we're doing to that page as well. So, or they can follow the Main Street Nevada page where I'm also posting. So.
Well, I noticed that the very last story I saw was about the old journal building.
Oh, yes. That was done by the local newspaper, actually. But yes.
Oh, really?
So yes, that was on the Main Street Nevada page, done by the local newspaper. And, you know, I want to just bring back to that. Even though the newspapers have gone to a regional coverage model, there is occasionally a local story that they do. And I know some of the writers, they're great writers. I just wish there was more. You know, I think everybody in town wishes there was more local stories. But it doesn't mean that some of the stories that they do aren't incredible stories. And I'm excited to see the old journal building project take place. It was my first place I worked at the paper here in Nevada. So it's going to turn into a brewery, and I'm super excited.
Well, thank you for coming and telling us about your amazing story.
No problem, Susan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marla.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts are Paul Wearson and Gina McAndrews, and I. Apologies, Gina. Paul and I have had several conversations in recent weeks about sources of news. Paul argued that because we have local people, we are getting the best news. What I've come to realize is that KHOI probably has the greatest variety of news and news sources of any Central Iowa radio station. In fact, there are things you can only find here from national and international places. Also, I've listened to other local talk programs. I noticed that the hosts advertise programs on their day of the week, especially Tune In Tuesday. And I thought about how many different kinds of news programs we have on Wednesday. Some Iowa voices and some national and international, many of which illustrate the advantages we have from being an affiliate of Pacifica Radio. With Democracy Now! And Letters in Politics, we get national and international news that doesn't duplicate any of the cable news, either Fox or MSNBC. I mean, occasionally there's an overlap story, but not much. But we have some pretty impressive programs that are produced right here in Iowa. One is new this year, and it airs on Monday at 7 p.m. and on Wednesday at noon. It was inspired by Laura Bellin's blog, Bleeding Heartland. Laura and our veteran political reporter, Dennis Hart, teamed up to cover the issues in the Iowa legislature last winter. I don't believe this information is so thoroughly and insightfully covered on any other media, not TV, newspapers, or other radio stations. I can't prove it, but you can see for yourself if you tune in at noon today. Although the legislature is out of session and the redistricting has taken place, Laura and Dennis are going to continue through the summer. If you tune in at noon today, you can see for yourself whether I exaggerate. But the real star for this unique approach and breadth of political activism is Ed Fallon, host of Fallon Forum, which will air at 4 p.m. today and every Wednesday. Here is Ed Fallon with us today. Hi, Ed. Thanks for coming by.
Hello,
Ed.
Hey, well, if Tuesday is, what did you call Tuesday again?
Tuesday is Tune In Tuesday.
Tune In Tuesday. Well, today must be What's Up Wednesday, right?
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so what's up? Well, we've actually changed the format of our program. It's the Fallon Forum has been going for over 12 years now. And it started out on one of the big stations. And what happened, of course, what happens to so many commercial radio stations, the very, very huge corporation bought it and they threw off all the local people.
Yeah.
Especially the progressive talkers. They don't like us at all. And so it's gone through, we've gone through several different, reinventions. We were for 5 years on a Latino station. And now we broadcast from a studio in my home. And I have a production team of Kathy Burns and Sherry Herdina who do a fantastic job of putting the show together. And we've just recently reincarnated as a call-in program. And that was hard to figure out. And Marla's mentioned Facebook. Yeah, Facebook has been a good place to be able to create that call-in option, because people have to be able to watch it live. You know, today on Wednesday's program, it's a rebroadcast on KHOI. So if Story County listeners want to be a part of the actual conversation, they get to tune in on Monday through Facebook, and then they can call in. And we share, I mean, this week's program, we talk about the Rittenhouse trial. That is not an easy conversation. And I was actually surprised that my co-host thought the verdict was the correct verdict. And we had callers who thought the verdict was correct, and those who didn't. And overall, people may say, what a hot mess this whole thing is. I mean, the laws that allowed this guy to carry an AR-15 to a protest, the different levels of concern about why he did that. I hope people will tune in and check out the conversation. A lot of our talk is about the climate crisis, because if we don't figure that one out, nothing else is going to matter. And right now, Story County is again in the crosshairs of not one but two proposed pipelines. And they're being presented, of course, as a solution to climate change. But, you know, those of us who dug into it kind of think otherwise. I mean, if you want to reduce the amount of carbon in the atmosphere, you pull out what's already there. And the best way to do that is through agriculture, forestry, you know, life systems that will sequester that carbon. But these proposals involve taking carbon that's going to be generated in the future, new carbon, carbon dioxide being emitted from ethanol plants. And, you know, I mean, we have mixed feelings. Well, I have mixed feelings about ethanol. I'm certainly not a big fan of continuing to extract fossil fuels from deep in the earth, but there's so many problems with ethanol. And one of them is it emits a lot of carbon dioxide. And so the plan is to take this carbon dioxide, put it in pipes, ship it to North Dakota for one pipeline, all the way to Illinois for the other pipeline. And then what? Well, they say they want to keep it in the ground. And this is a literal quote we want to keep it in the ground for, quote, a million years. I don't know how anybody can make such a statement. But when pushed about what they really want to do with over the long haul, for example, do they want to use it for an enhanced oil extraction? They won't say no. So, you know, the problem is several problems. And, you know, a bigger problem for Story County residents is this may be coming to your property. Now, I don't know who was at the, if anybody listening was at the Summit Carbon Solutions hearing back in, I believe it was September, but Story County was one of the first two counties to have a hearing by Summit. And, there were a couple of landowners who got up and spoke very, very powerfully about why. Nothing to do with climate at all. They just saw this as a huge violation of their property rights and a taking of their land for a purpose that they had no intention of consenting to. Now, the next round is coming. That's the Navigator Pipeline, and the hearing in Story County will be on the 6th of January. So that'll be the very tail end of that set of hearings. Now, altogether, these pipelines are going to run through 1,600 miles of Iowa farm ground. Put that in perspective, the Dakota Access Pipeline, that runs through about 350 miles of Iowa farm ground. These two pipelines combined will go through 1,600 miles. They will tear through a heck of a lot of farmland. So, you know, again, the program, we try to cover, you know, we used to focus on trying to bring a whole bunch of different things into the conversation. And now we're trying to more have a focused, you know, one or two topics where we really talk, really dig into it a bit deeper and give callers a chance to participate, to weigh in, to let us know how they feel. One thing I asked my callers to do is not to ramble, and so I just did that. So you can cut me off now. Stop me before I ramble again.
Did you have a section on the Great March for Climate Justice?
We have talked about that. That was you're kind of combining two more. There was the Great March for Climate Action, which went all the way across the U.S. back in 2014, 50 people marching from L.A. to D.C. And, you know, our focus was to raise awareness about climate change. And then the First Nation Farmer Climate Unity March came through Ames and Story County. That was back in 2018. And that march followed the path of the Dakota Access Pipeline as much as we could, and tried to show unity between Indigenous communities who have been affected by the Dakota Access Pipeline and who will be affected by these carbon dioxide pipelines, unity between that constituency and landowners and farmers who are in the direct path of these pipelines.
Do you think we're gaining much ground after their big meeting and everyone coming together? And have you heard many good results out of for the climate?
It's a mixed bag for sure. I mean, you can't say that we are making no progress, but you also can't say that we're making progress fast enough. And the COP26 Climate Summit in Glasgow, which we spent a lot of time talking about on my program, that's a case in point. I mean, yes, there were agreements made on methane, on deforestation, on coal to some extent. But overall, the biggest accomplishment, I guess, was a recognition for the first time that, yes, we need to get off fossil fuels. I mean, even the fossil fuel companies are recognizing that. But a lot of what they're doing in response to that involves what we call greenwashing, making it look like they're taking those big steps, but not really. So, COP26 was, according to a lot of scientists, that had to be the big moment where we turned the corner and we really saw the kind of decisive, urgent, present action we need to move beyond the worst impacts of climate change. And that didn't happen. And that should concern anybody. Anybody who's paying attention ought to be a little worried and ought to be doing everything they can in their own lives to learn how to live differently on the land. I think the more, I mean, Gandhi said, you don't have to wait for the world to change. You have to be the change you want to see, and then the world will begin to adjust. The world will begin to change with you. And that's nice. It's true to some extent. It's very optimistic. But I think the bottom line is, with climate and with so many other things, we need policy changes. We need our leadership at the city council level, the county boards of supervisors, the state legislatures, certainly the U.S. Congress. We need the people in charge of those positions who have been entrusted with our votes to take action. And I'm one thing I'm really excited about, and maybe this is a possibility for Ames and Nevada and Ziering and, and Roland, all the other, every town in Story County. Last year, my partner Kathy and I initiated an idea called the Food Security Task Force. The idea being that there are neighborhoods and constituencies that are already impacted by food security, who already don't have access to the nutrition they need to live well. But it's going to hit everybody. When climate change gets worse and worse, when supply chains get disrupted, when you can no longer count on food being shipped from California because of the fires, because of the lack of water, for who knows what other reasons, where's the food going to come from? I mean, we need three things in a big way. You go 3 minutes without breathing and you're done. You go 3 days without water, you're done. 3 weeks without food, you're done. And we need to tackle all of those, of course. But, our plan here in Des Moines was to look at the food issue and begin to figure out how we could raise more food in the city of Des Moines. And I know Ames has had these conversations. I can't remember the name of the initiative, but I believe there was some pretty specific activity looking at how and where to grow food in Ames. Maybe.
There's some community gardens, and there's also Food at First that supplies meals every day, and they started some of their own gardens now as well.
And more of that needs to happen. The first, Des Moines Food Security Task Force met for 6 months with a very specific charge: how to make it easier for residents to grow food on their property. And there's a really good website now called Feed DSM. DSM is Des Moines. Mm-hmm. Feed DSM. And if you check that out, it'll give you a lot of resources on on where to go for supplies, for example, how to find seeds, how to raise bees, what are the laws regarding chickens. Des Moines is a very generous city when it comes to permitting chickens to be raised in the city. You can even raise a couple goats or sheep, or not sheep, goats or pigs in the city at the moment. So, but there's considerations to all that. So the website is a resource center for that sort of thing. And the next step will be, okay, we're still trying to decide for sure the next step, but I hope the next step is, how do we identify big tracts of land where professional farmers, people who want to raise food for a living, not just for themselves, but for sale or to give away, how do we help those folks identify land that will remain agricultural into the future, that land that won't be turned over to a parking lot or a strip mall or some other development, land that we will allow to be agricultural permanently.
So, yeah, one organization that's trying to help do that is the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust, SILT.
They're doing great work. SILT is doing fantastic work. And
it's a little more on the larger scale.
And it's a little more on the rural scale, and that's important too. But I know one of the conversations they're having now that involve cities is how to ring cities with farms that are producing food for local markets.
Yes.
So, yeah, we try to do it. We raise about 50% of the food we eat. My partner Kathy and I here on a tenth of an acre. It's very intensive. We like to go as we use as much vertical opportunities as possible. But what you can't get, we get from, well, some of our product comes from right on the Story County line, our lamb. But we get dairy products from Guthrie or Dallas County, and so there's already a lot of farms out there. But that's for, there's not a lot of people doing what we do. And more people, I think, need to be encouraged, not just for environmental reasons, but for health reasons. I mean, when you're talking about locally sourced organic products, you're talking about the healthiest possible food. And more of that ought to be available, and more of that ought to be affordable. And that's a big challenge. It's both. I mean, sometimes people don't know where to go to find these food products, but also sometimes they're out there. Sometimes the price tag is high enough because the production is, organic producers have challenges. One thing they don't have is subsidies. I mean, the federal government is really good about pumping a lot of money into the corn and bean industry. And I get why that's important, but if you're growing food for local markets, you don't have that benefit. So
right. And then one of the biggest catches is you need labor. So that's always hard to find for a lot of the intensive vegetables and that sort of thing. And then you have livestock, it's hard to find places to harvest the animals. And those are getting fewer and far between, too.
And even larger farmers are finding challenges there. I mean, we just saw Senator Grassley and Congresswoman Axony, the one Democrat in the Iowa congressional delegation. There was a bipartisan effort to investigate and do something about unfair pricing in the cattle market. Now, that, of course, helps the large producers as well, but it also helps the small producers. So good stuff.
Yeah, they're coming. They've been talking about that for 30 some years.
Yeah, right. It's about
hopefully so. They might actually do something. Neil Smith was trying to do something back when I was working in the Senate in the 80s, 89.
So. Neil Smith was elected to the U.S. Congress the year I was born.
Wow, he's an amazing man.
He, of course, just recently passed away.
Yeah. Yes.
At what, 101, I believe.
Yes.
Quite a legacy. Yeah. So, I mean, the Fallon Forum tries to, we're not like a news, we don't list all the different news stories. We try to dig into something, ideally a couple somethings. The one thing we do every week, and this is where Kathy comes in, is she co-hosts a segment on food and farming. So every week we talk about something to do with food and farming. Sometimes it's more serious stuff. Sometimes it's lighter, funner. This week we'll talk about the importance of exposing kids to food growing and to getting kids, get their hands dirty. You know, people always want to keep their kids clean. Well, no, let them get dirty. let them play in the mud. Let them learn how to plant a seed. Get to see how that process works. Learn a little patience. You know, you put the seed in the ground, it doesn't grow instantly, like Michael Bloomberg would like to think it does. You know, it. I'm referring to a comment that Bloomberg made. This is the rich guy from New York who ran for president, who said he was putting down. He was trying to praise high tech jobs, and by doing so, he decided to put down farmers. And he said, you know, what's the big deal with farming? You put a seed in the ground, you cover it with soil, you water it, corn grows. Well, Mike, it's not that easy, is it? No. So you know,
say, on that note,
yes,
I think I need to point out that we are drawing to the end of our hour pretty rapidly. So thank you. And
sure.
I ought to put in a plug for today's Capital Week because we have an author who wrote a book called Bet the Farm, and she addresses a lot of the issues you're talking about. So just as we slide into our outro, thank you so much for being with us, Ed. And that was Ed Fallon representing the Fallon Forum. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, with co-hosts Gina McAndrews and Paul Wearson. Also appearing on today's show were Laura Beatty of the Boone County Convention and Visitors Bureau, Shannon McKinley of the Story City Greater Chamber Connection, Marla Sparker of Stories by Marlis, and Ed Fallon, host of the Fallon Forum.
Special thanks to our interim station manager, Michael Murphy, for his engineering today of today's program, and to producer Lynn Carey for her assistance. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Remember that you can also hear today's program online at khoifm.org. And find links to our guests and information you heard during this program. Our website again is khoifm.org. Please consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station. With your financial support, we will continue to grow. Please go to our website, khoifm.org, and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member, or just make your donation today. It's a great week to do it.
Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Tannenbaum by Aretha Franklin of the Big Band Holiday. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. See you again on the radio.
You are listening to Community Radio, KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames.